Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Which element is the most brilliant?
Which element is the laziest?
And which element is the socialite of the periodic table?
Find out now in Another Words Unraveled. Welcome to Another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of etymology books, including Once Upon a Word and Words from Hell. And today we are getting elementary, my dear Watts, are we not?
Yeah, very good. Yes, we are. we're both going to be in our element, I think, with this one, because we're looking at the etymology of the periodic table.
Very nice.
But where to start? There's so many elements.
Shall we start with number one? We can go in order.
Yeah, okay, let's start with the least dense and atomic number one.
Mm-hmm. That's hydrogen. This is going to come up a lot as we discuss the elements of the periodic table. The ending on it, that gen ending, means forming. So it can give you information about what the element forms or what it's formed from, or sometimes things that are not actually pertinent to the element as it actually functions, because a lot of these names were developed long before we knew as much as we do now about their properties. But hydrogen is correctly named. It means water forming because it forms water when exposed to oxygen.
Yeah, you can take that gen bit at the end as being related to generation, generator. So you could say water generator, I suppose.
Ooh, which is
also obviously related to gender as well, genesis and generous, but that's a little bit more of a sort of indirect link. So we've got the water generator. What other gens have we got?
Wait a minute. For real quick before we move on, you speak German. Do you know the German word for hydrogen? Because I love it.
It's Wasserstoff.
Water stuff.
Stuff. The word stuff is a little less imprecise in German, a little less vague. It means material. It's a bit more like material.
We also use stuff sometimes in English in the same way as German does, I believe. Like the stuff of such and such is the material that makes it up.
Yeah, the sort of casual word that we've ended up with in stuff, it started out as being, you know, less casual, and it meant the essence, essentially, of something was the stuff. The stuff of legend is not like oh, you know, the bits and bobs from the legend.
Exactly.
So can you guess from the German name what Sauerstoff might be?
Sour stuff? Something that is sour?
Yes, it's another element.
Ooh, I feel like I should know this, but I don't.
It's oxygen.
Ah, oh, very nice. Because oxys means acid in Greek as well. So it's something that is figuratively sour.
Yeah. And in fact, it's related to the word acid and the word acrid and the word acute as well. And the French word aigre, which means sour, but that means it's also related to the word vinegar, which means sour wine.
Are you familiar with what oxygen used to be called?
Yeah, I am. But I'm going to let you go. Well, actually, there's two former names, but I'm going to let you go with this because one of them is quite hard to say.
The one that I'm thinking of is called dephlogisticated air. And I've heard people put different emphasis on some of those syllables. So if you know more about dephlogisticated air than I do, then apologies for the way I'm pronouncing it.
That's how I thought it was pronounced. And that's how I imagine Joseph Priestley pronounced it when he called it that.
A lot of people, I've heard them like put more O on the flow in the phlogistication.
Dephlogisticated air. All right. So this is to do with phlogiston or phlogiston or phlogiston, which is a mysterious substance, isn't it?
Right. Now we know that fire is the visible form of a combustion reaction between oxygen and a heat source that produces combustion byproducts. But phlogiston or phlogiston theory is rooted in the theories about like there being four elements, essentially, water, fire, earth, air. And it dates back to the 1700s. And it says that things that are combustible are rich in phlogiston. And when they're burned, the remaining ash is like the true form of the combustible thing because it no longer contains phlogiston. And then phlogiston is released into the air. So there's like a phlogiston cycle too.
So this dephlogisticated air as oxygen is air that is not inflammable, which oxygen, we know oxygen helps things to burn, but it doesn't set on fire itself. Otherwise, we'd be in trouble.
My understanding is some of this had to do with observations around like putting fire in an enclosed space and observing that it burned out more quickly.
Oh, I like this. We're not just getting etymology here. We're getting science.
My dad is a chemist. I formally dedicate this episode to Jim Ferris, who makes a lot of jokes about his last name sounding like iron.
Oh, very good.
Ferris.
We'll have to get Jim Ferris to show us his metal sometime.
Oh, he'd be so excited.
But why is oxygen called the acid generator?
It was initially thought to be necessary for forming acids, and now we know that that is not the case. So we have a lot of, you know, false theories about oxygen because obviously we are surrounded by it and breathe it. So it's been observed for quite a long time, and there's been a lot of conjecture about what it does and why.
So that's oxygen.
On that note, we should move on to another gen since we're on that topic. Let's do nitrogen, shall we?
Yeah, the generator of nitre. Nitre being a salt, is that right?
It's soda, like native soda. And a lot of the words that we will discuss in this episode have to do with soda and things that are called sodas. The Greek nitron was a word for sodium carbonate because the gas was identified in nitric acid and potassium nitrate, or nitre in its original, or in its mineral form. Sodium bicarbonate is used as an antacid to treat heartburn and acid indigestion. Sodium bicarbonate, or baking soda, is used as an antacid. Sodium carbonate, which is called soda or soda ash, is used as like a water softener or a food processing aid, or you can put it in your pool.
All right.
Basically, these are alkaline, they're acid or pH modifiers.
You don't want to drink these particular sodas.
You could drink baking soda if you wanted, but not sodium carbonate.
You mentioned potassium. Potassium has quite an interesting root as well, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's from the word potash. And do you know what potash is?
Well, it's wood ash, isn't it? It gets used in making soap, for example, right?
You soak like plant ashes or wood ash in a pot, and then you can manufacture any number of things used in soap making and a bunch of other stuff. It's vastly used prior to the industrial era and still today in various ways. Do you know why the chemical symbol for potassium is K?
I do know this one, actually, because this element, the existence of it, has been known by soap makers for a very long time. And it was known to the Romans, and they called it kalium, which was basically from their word for potash.
And then ultimately from Arabic.
Yeah. Alkali, which gives us the word alkali.
Absolutely. We have all kinds of connections here.
Yeah, it's a really satisfying one, actually. Let's talk about some more of these ones where the chemical symbol doesn't really match up. Because a lot of the time it's because the chemical symbol relates to the Latin name rather than the English name, which is, you know, to be expected. English, you know, is a very, very powerful language, but, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all. What other ones have we got?
I mentioned one just a second ago, iron. It's one of our Germanic elemental names. The chemical symbol is Fe from the Latin word ferrum. Therefore, something that is made of iron is ferrous.
That's right. Jess the ferrous, the iron lady.
Very nice. Also, Ferris in Arabic means knight too. So I feel like there's a lot to be done with like a personal brand logo here.
Yeah, you had a lot of options when it came to naming yourself, didn't you?
Oh yeah. And then like the name that I smashed mine up with means sapphire. So a sapphire knight or a sapphire iron.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. Interesting combinations there.
And your name sounds a bit like sapphire, doesn't it? Sapphiris. Mm. Yeah. That's great. That's really cool. That's better than Watts. Watts is really boring.
I mean, it's electric, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. It's an elementary, my dear Watson. And Watson and Watts are, etymologically speaking, the same name. Basically, ooh, they both mean the son of Watt.
Son of, yeah, that makes sense.
I think Watt's kind of a peasanty sort of name. I don't think it's one to really shout about. There you go.
Oh, good stuff. I mean, Ferris, the name, is really from like a Scottish name for like some guy, like strong or loyal man or something like that. So not really related to the Latin element or anything like that.
And name origins are always tricky. I dread it when people get in touch with me and say, can you tell me the origin of my name? It's like, no, not really. Because for a start, the internet is so full of rubbish about where names come from. I don't know where people generate this stuff from. I think some of it's just off the top of their heads. But also names change so much as they cross borders, and it's just really difficult.
Absolutely. And like there's also something to be said for like if your grandma told you that your last name means the bravest person on the planet, I don't want to be the one to tell you that it actually means mudsucker, you know? Like,
mudsucker.
I'm like, keep your family lore and cherish it.
You know, but while we're talking about names and the disparity between the names for elements and their chemical symbols, to bring us back to the periodic table a little bit here, we haven't talked about like the big ones, the precious metals, which are the most puzzling ones, I think. Well, the ones that people have come across and gone, oh, what's going on there? Why is gold AU? I'm sure you can explain, Jess.
From the Latin aurum, which means gold. I actually like the origin of the word gold itself a little bit better, because it is related to the word for like yellow and bright. And we've talked about this on our color episode, that yellow meant a lot of things, but I like that one has retained that same color throughout the years.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real revelation to me actually that gold and yellow came from the same place. But actually, if you can trace both that Y and that G quite easily back to a ha sound, because H's often turn into guz or y sounds, and then, you know, the rest of it kind of falls into place. Amazing. Silver's a good one. Silver's a really good one. Actually, all sorts of tangents to go off with the name of silver, but its chemical symbol is Ag, and that comes from the Latin name for the metal, argentum. Here's the interesting thing. So Argentina is so called because Spanish colonists found a load of silver there. They were thrilled. They named the place after silver. However, they did not name it after the Spanish word for silver, which people will know is plata. They named it after the Latin word for silver, as we talked about, argentum. But there is an element that's named after the Spanish word for silver.
Is that platinum?
It is. But the cute thing about it is it's not from plata. It's from platina, which is little silver.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah. Oh, and this segues very neatly into another element that has a strange chemical symbol for what it's called.
What's that?
Hg.
That is mercury.
Mercury, mm-hmm. Which is also known as?
Quicksilver.
Ta-da! Mm-hmm.
Named after the Roman god Mercury. Quick in different ways. Quick can refer to like moving quickly or alive, like in the phrase the quick and the dead, which I think we've addressed before. But then, of course, Mercury was associated with like the Greek Hermes, very fast traveling in Mercury.
Yeah, and Hg is from the, well, it's modern Latin, hydrargyrum, because that's kind of a hybrid word. The hydra bit is Greek, and the argyrum is from the Latin for silver, and it means water silver. So again, we're getting sort of quick silver, quick meaning liquid rather than speedy.
Mm-hmm. So the ium or ending is usually used to coin the names of metals. And you see that all across the periodic table. But there's one in particular that has the ium ending that is not a metal, and that is helium.
Oh, I can't believe we've not mentioned helium so far.
Right. So it was named after Helios, the god of the sun, who apparently had a very high-pitched voice.
Is that why?
No, not at all.
It's because they found it, they identified it in the corona of the sun, right?
That is correct. They observed it before they got a hold of it, which it was assumed to be an alkali metal like lithium, sodium, and potassium, but it isn't, you know, it's a gas.
Isn't that amazing? The idea that they can come up with a name for it and identify it without ever encountering it, because they'd never come across a helium balloon. What a sad life they lived that they'd never come across a helium balloon. You know what we're going to have to get into?
Noble gases. Oh, wait, sorry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are. I want to just scratch off, tick off all of the ones where the name and the chemical symbol don't match up.
But we need
to get into eum endings, and we should get into noble gases as well. But let's just reel off a couple more of the ones where they don't quite match up. Do we do lead yet? We didn't do lead yet.
We didn't do lead. Lead, of course, has the chemical symbol Pb, and it's from the Latin plumbum, meaning lead,
boom,
also for lead, but also related to words like plumber and plumbing and all manner of things. And it's because most plumbing, like plumbers were originally people who worked with lead, and like a lot of the, some of the elements that go into sanitation involve lead, including like bobbers that were called plums.
Yeah, a plumb line as well, you know, a piece of lead that you dangle to see whether something is straight, which would presumably have been used by plumbers, but also by all manner of craftspeople. And also pipes were made of lead.
Absolutely.
But some people still have lead pipes. It's not ideal.
But yeah, in Latin, a plumbarius was someone who worked with lead, either smelted it or made things out of it or whatever else.
Plumber is one of those words that has had a silent letter inserted into it retroactively.
Is that, that's what we call phonotactics, where English like doesn't really like, is that what's happening here? English doesn't really like the mb.
No, it's not that. It is Renaissance scholars wanting to stress the word, well, show off the fact that they know the word's Latin roots, because it was plumier in
French.
Mm. French when it came over to English. I mean, there is now a B in that word in French as well.
So we reinserted it.
Mm. Yeah, but when it came over to English, there was no B in it. Both English and French have since put the B back in, because the, you know, in the Latin, there would have been one.
We also silence MB in other words too, though. We've got like dumb and numb and thumb.
True. Yeah, so that'll be phonotactics, won't it? That'll just be the fact that it's weird to go mb.
Yeah. At the end of a word. Uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. One more that's got a weird chemical symbol is tungsten, which used to be called wolframite in English and is called Wolfram in German. And actually, the word tungsten is Swedish for, I think, hard stone. But actually, in Swedish, the element is called wolfram.
Huh, interesting. and that's why the chemical symbol is W, right?
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And wolfram. So I read that it comes from an old mining nickname, meaning wolf's cream, which would be Wolfram in German. But someone told me that it was actually from, and this sounds more plausible to me, from another mining term, a German word that doesn't get used anymore, which was Rahm, and it meant sort of soot. So it would be wolf's soot or dirt, which kind of works a bit better for me than wolf's cream.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be wolf's
That's uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Yeah. All right.
This is a good segue. So there are a few others that have some entertaining, like mining related origins. These are some of our other Germanic ones, right? So we've got cobalt is one of them, which I believe we've even addressed this on our color episode. It's from the German word kobold, which is like, it's a goblin essentially, or a, like especially a little one, and they still exist in like fantasy literature and things like that today. Cobalt was called a goblin because when it was mined, the rock was laced with like arsenic and sulfur often when mining for cobalt.
Yeah, the miners thought it was making them ill, but it was probably the arsenic in the
right.
rock. Actually, someone told me as well that kobold So a kobold is not necessarily, you know, an evil pixie or anything like that. They're a bit mischievous, but they can work on your side as well. And the miners believed that if you treated them well, they would let you know when a mine collapse was imminent by knocking on the rock from the other side.
Ooh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And it's born of the fact that shortly before collapses, miners noticed that there would be a sort of creaking knocking sound, which is
probably creaking of rock, right?
Exactly. But it fits together quite nicely. Mm. And I'm willing to go.
I'm here for this lore. I like it.
I like that one too. There's two directions we can go in from this one. We can continue down the sort of mythological route, or we can talk a bit more about sort of mischief in the names of elements, can't we?
So I would advocate for going to nickel because it's right after cobalt on the periodic table.
I can't believe we hadn't already said nickel. I'd assumed we'd already gone there. Yeah, of course.
So this one is another type of goblin. Nickel is a shortening of the Swedish or German, like copper nickel or kopfernickel, meaning false copper because the ore was mistaken for copper. But the nickel bit is also a word for like a demon or a goblin. It appears in like Nick is regularly a nickname for the devil, which we've talked about before.
This just keeps coming up for us, doesn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's also related, of course, to the word pumpernickel, which means...
Devil's fart.
Or fart goblin, I've heard it described as well.
Yeah, you can call nickel, kupfernickel, the copper imp or the copper goblin.
Mm-hmm. But that little Nick is in there as well, a little nasty and mischievous demon.
There are some other cheeky ones. Krypton is so called because it hides from you.
So Krypton is one of several that were named in 1898. There were several at the time, and all of them were named in some sort of way to allude to the fact that, like, they hadn't been found yet. Like, whoops, missed it. So, like, Krypton was hidden. Another one was Neon, which means new. And Sir William Ramsay and Morris W. Travers, who discovered it, also discovered its ability to, like, glow in a glass tube. And it was very shortly after that that it started being applied to, like, neon signs and stuff, too. So that one took off very quickly as an entertaining one.
And then you can quite easily hop over to Xenon, can't you? Which is known as the stranger gas, the words related to the word xenophobia, you know, which is fear of the strange or fear of the foreign. But Xenon is so called because it's a stranger among the noble gases.
And also because it hadn't been discovered until quite recently. All of these were like goofily named by the same people.
That works very well, doesn't it? Yeah. So why is it strange for a noble gas? I suppose because it's uncharacteristically reactive for a noble gas.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah. That is it. We should also therefore mention why they're called noble gases.
Because they are unreactive and stable. In other words, they were well-behaved and genteel, yeah, so to speak.
I like to think of them as being too good to hang out with the elements, that kind of nobility.
And the noble gases are helium, argon, neon, krypton, oganesson. I always mispronounce that one.
I've got a fact about that one, you know.
Oh, okay.
Oganesson, which I, to be fair, that's the first time I've heard anyone pronounce it with any confidence, so... Thank you, because I could not find how to do it. That is the only element that is named after someone who is still alive.
Ooh, very nice.
Yuri Oganessian, who's a Russian chemist, he is 91 years old, but he must be quite old. yeah, he's still with us. He also found Tennessine as well.
What is that named after?
Tennessee.
That makes sense. That is where I'm from, as a matter of fact.
Place names as well. Oh, there's loads of place names. We'll get into that as well.
Oh, yeah. And just to close out the noble gases, because we paused to learn about Oganesson, we've got Xenon, which we've already mentioned, and then we have radon, which is was so named because it's a decay product of radium, which is related towards like radioactive and whatnot, and ray and radius and other such things, named by Marie Curie and her spouse as well.
Ah, well, there are at least two elements that are named for Marie Curie.
Indeed. Tell us about them.
Well, there's curium, which is named after her and Pierre Curie, but there's also polonium, which is named after her home country, which is not France. It is Poland.
That makes sense.
And actually, that's a source of some sensitivity. I don't know. Sensitivity is not the right word for it. But she was.
There's drama.
She was apparently quite the patriot, really, for Poland.
Oh, I see.
So the fact that people think she's French, I think Poles think would have irritated her.
I could see that.
Because her name isn't even Marie, really. It's Maria Skłodowska-Curie.
Oh, beautiful. Since we're on the topic of elements named after places, there are many of these. There's another one named after Stockholm, Sweden. The Latin name for it is Holmia. So we have holmium.
I've got a whole bit here.
Okay, all right, let's hear it.
I was in Stockholm last year while I was researching all of this stuff. And I noticed that the one place that has the most elements named after it is a small place on the Baltic coast, on the Swedish Baltic coast, not that far from Stockholm.
Ytterby?
Yes, but I had no idea how to pronounce it. So I asked a guy and it's Ytterby. Ytterby.
I'm not going to try that.
The Y is this weird Germanic Y sound that we don't use in English, but most of the other Germanic languages do. And there are four elements named directly after it. Ytterbium, yttrium, terbium, and erbium. I guess if they found a fifth, they would call it bium. Actually, that's not true because they did find a fifth. You have scandium and holmium, both of which were also discovered in Ytterby. And there's another one which was thulium. Do you know what thul is?
I used to know this.
Thul is a really interesting one. So They've already called one scandium. So they're thinking of something else that they can call it that's kind of geographically linked. And thul was the Greek Latin word for the northernmost reaches of civilization. And so was kind of a byword for Scandinavia.
Huh, interesting.
So they named one of the elements they found in Ytterby thulium. And they also found tantalum there, named after Tantalus. We'll get into that. I'm going to let you go on that one because you're really good on Tantalus. But what's interesting about all of those, or what all of those elements have in common, is that they're rare earths. And so when you find one rare earth, you tend to find the rest of them. I mean, they're basically everywhere, rare earths, but it's very rare to find them in a sufficient concentration to make it easy to extract them. But they found all of these in Ytterby or Ytterby.
Interesting.
Anyway, I trampled all over you there. I just had this whole Ytterby spiel after speaking to this one barista in Stockholm.
You did better with it than I would have.
But we were on elements named after places.
Elements named after places. Let's see. So we have hafnium, which is the Latin name for Copenhagen. Several of these are like the Latin name for something or other.
And hafen means harbor. So it's kind of, yeah. Harbor.
Very nice. And then lutetium, or is it lutetium? Either way, it's named after Lutetia, which is a Gallo-Roman town and like the predecessor to Paris.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
You have europium, americium, berkelium, named after Berkeley, presumably. Darmstadtium, that's a place in Germany, Darmstadt. And then there's one in Scotland, which is strontium. Strontian.
Very nice. Any other place names?
There is one other one. Bit of a controversial one, because it may or it may not be, but is copper named after a place?
The theory is Cyprus, but why is that controversial?
Because we don't know whether Cyprus is named after the metal or the metal is named after Cyprus. So the Romans, the metal was called Aesculapium, something along those lines, which means Cyprus brass. So that would suggest that the metal is named after Cyprus, but we can't be sure. All we know is that Cyprus, the island, was a big source of copper for the Romans, hence they called it Cyprus brass. But yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one. The more I look into it, the less I know.
The other theory about this, I believe, at least the namesake of the island, is that it's also unclear whether Cyprus is named after the tree or the tree is named after Cyprus.
I didn't even know those words were related. I just assumed they're homophones.
Cyprus trees are named after, or are native to Cyprus as well.
Why are they spelled it differently then?
That is a great question.
You don't have to answer that, Jess. You don't have to have all the answers. I'm not going to hold you to account for that particular.
Here. So the Greek word for a cypress tree is kyperissos. And then cypress itself is from the Greek kypros. So this is like the same root, essentially, said to mean like land of cypress trees, if it's named after the cypress tree. But it's about the endings.
So it could be that the metal is named after the island, which is named after the trees.
Yes, that could be that could be a theory here.
I didn't need that, Jess. It's complicated enough. There are more cheeky ones that we haven't talked about. For example, lanthanum and dysprosium are kind of just named after words meaning shy because they found them hard to find.
That'll happen.
Yeah, and argon. Did we talk about argon being the lazy one?
Oh, yeah, we've not talked about argon. I like that one.
Because it's unreactive. It's noble and lazy.
I like this one, too, because it's not related to the word Argo, as in like the ship Argos, which means like quick, from... I don't know if we even know the source of this one, but argon is related to words like synergy and ergonomic and organized, which are all implying like work. So argon literally means like not working.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's related to organize. That's amazing. I mean, we'd never have got to that.
All of these have like different first vowels, so they hide a little bit. And then like synergy literally means working together. That one is interesting. I think we've mentioned on a previous episode, but that word is a lot older than you might think. Like, it's not just like corporate jargon.
Yeah, to me it was invented in the 90s by a man in a gray suit.
It's a biblical term. Like, it's a Greek variation on the word like collaboration, which literally also means working together.
I would drop my Bible if I had a Bible and if I read the word synergy.
Synergy.
Who wrote this? Jeff Bezos. just on these slightly cheeky ones, the worst name of any element, I would wager, is osmium. Do you know what osmium means?
Oh, tell me.
It means the stinky one.
The stinky one. There's another stinky one. There's another one that has to do with smell. It starts with a B. What is it? Bromine.
Bromine?
Bromine means stench as well. Bromos means stench in Greek.
I don't know about bromine, but the osmium one's kind of a bit unfair. I think it's just that the compound that the scientist was working on was stinky, not necessarily the osmium itself. But by the way, what's this thing with scientists like taking all their frustration out on the element for posterity? You know, they just, which this was a faff. Some of them are named for just being, you know, difficult to work with. So, what, you know, if they'd not been so short-sighted, they'd have eventually got over the irritation and come up with a better name.
Well, that would require like some generalized consistency around the names of the elements, which we do not have.
No, we don't. Actually, science is very bad with naming things. We've discovered this when it comes to zoology and and such. Very bad at it. Very bad at finding clarity.
By the way, people in our comments have been like, there have been a lot of comments and discourse whenever one of us says zoology or zoology, which I would say zoology. And we've got people in both camps. So.
And I flit back and forth between them as well. I'm not consistent on it myself. I know you would need maybe three O's to make it zoology, but that would be ridiculous. Now I'm going to keep going with zoology.
I like it. Yeah. Very nice. People always expect me, and I'm sure they also expect you, to be like wildly pedantic about pronunciation and spelling and grammar. Yeah. But like, we got here because of how pedantic English isn't, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's people must be permanently disappointed. Although here's the thing, the big railway station in the west of Berlin, so what used to be West Berlin.
I'm really interested to see where this goes because I don't know how we got on a train.
So it's called Bahnhof Zoo. Because it's where the zoo is. But in German, zoo, spelled Z-O-O, is pronounced Zoo, so not zoo. So make of that what you will.
All right. Should we get back to the...
To the elements?
Another one, which I feel like should probably have a stinky name because it's very stinky, but instead has a rather, well, is associated with hell, more like is sulfur, which means it probably comes from a root meaning to burn, but the other name for it is brimstone, also meaning stone that burns, essentially. I feel like the smell of it is probably the most distinctive thing about it. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's kind of biblical because I'm trying to get us around to the mythical ones because we teased them a couple of times and I know you're so good on the mythical stuff. Earlier I mentioned tantalum. Can you tell us this story? It's come up before.
There are actually two Tantalus related elements here. One of them is tantalum, and it is named after the Greek figure Tantalus, who, as we have discussed before, is condemned to stand in water up to his chin but can't get it, and stand below a bough of fruit or grapes and can't ever reach it. So tortured for all eternity, exactly. Apparently because it is resistant to absorption in acid, like Tantalus being denied water. And then the other one is niobium, which is named after Niobe, the daughter of Tantalus in Greek mythology, named by German scientist Heinrich Rosa, who discovered it in the mineral tantalite, which is also the source of the element tantalum.
Right.
So it's sort of like it has a child, another child.
Yeah, they hang out together. And you could kind of say one is the offspring of the other. Nice. I like that one. Other mythical ones?
There's titanium. That's probably the most well-known, named after the Titans. Not necessarily, like, I've heard arguments that it's named after, like, how strong it is, which would make sense, but also perhaps because they were, like, the sons of the Earth, and there are a few other elements that are named after, like, implying that they, like, came from the Earth or they were born of the Earth.
Yeah, the Titans are the gods that come before the Olympians, basically, aren't they? And there's another element that's named after one of the Titans.
After one of the Titans, that's Prometheum, which anyone who, you know, knows their Greek mythology, even a little bit about it, will know that it's named after Prometheus. And this one's like kind of dark. It was detected in the fusion products of uranium while working on the Manhattan Project. So it's named after Prometheus because he stole fire from the gods and was punished for it, implying that like humanity will be punished by nuclear war.
Oh, that's a much more sort of politically charged explanation than I'd come across. I just read that it was so punishingly difficult to synthesize that it was named after Prometheus.
Entirely possible how fanciful these the people who named it. It was Jacob Marinsky and Lawrence Glenenden. So I'm not sure how creative they were getting, but that was the explanation that I read.
I like it. I'm gonna take it as true.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
And another mythological one is cadmium, which is named after King Cadmus.
Yes, the legendary founder of Thebes, where this was found. And then Cadmia was the citadel in Thebes, where he supposedly ruled.
One nice little tidbit about King Cadmus is he's supposedly responsible for delivering the Phoenician alphabet to the Greeks.
Beautiful. Hmm. One other mythological one is palladium. Named after Pallas Athena.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Palladium is also like a word, like you can use it in conversation as a word for a safeguard. The Palladian was a like an image of Pallas Athena, supposedly in the citadel of Troy that kept the city safe.
Was it a common name for like a venue, Palladium, in the US like it was in Britain?
Mm-hmm, yeah, you still see that in like movie theaters and things like that. Let's see, are there any other mythological ones that we missed?
Thorium and vanadium. Thorium named after the Norse god Thor, and vanadium after one of the very many names for Freya.
Uh-huh, that's right. There's also, I mean, you could argue, it kind of depends on your take on it, but phosphorus could perhaps be said to be mythology adjacent, because it means light bearer. It glows in the dark. And then Phosphoros was also a name of a Greek god affiliated with Venus, the morning star, and also used as a name that shows up in the Greek version of the Bible that has now been affiliated with Lucifer. So all kinds of connections there.
And then if we're going to be slightly tangential, we can say that you know, plutonium, neptunium, uranium, and selenium are also sort of mythologically related, but they're actually named after celestial bodies, you know, the three planets of Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus. And then selenium is named after the moon.
Mm-hmm. Selene being also a goddess affiliated with the moon. I suppose you could say that this one is a little bit mythology adjacent, but it's anything that has to do with, like, you see nods to the idea of, like, the philosopher's stone here and there in chemistry and in elemental names.
Or in Harry Potter.
Oh, right, exactly.
It wasn't called that in America, though, was it? Is it called?
It was called the Sorcerer's Stone, which makes no sense whatsoever. Apparently,
what's that about?
Apparently, they didn't think we were smart enough to know what a Philosopher's Stone was at age 11.
I first read that when I was 9, and I had no problem with the idea of a philosopher.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, also, you know, the Philosopher's Stone is a much like older concept than that. It's supposed to be this thing that can grant eternal life. And it's a very old concept, and also like transmute gold, lead into gold or other substances into gold. The word elixir also was a word for the same concept. So the element that has a connection to the Philosopher's Stone is kind of. Magnesium and anything named after magnets and manganese too. These words are all just this weird mishmash of like things named after magnetic materials. Magnets and magnetite are named after magnesia. This is a district in Thessaly, Greece, where a magnetic mineral was supposedly first found. Manganese is also named after the region and was like weirdly corrupted over time. It could be used to remove like color in the glass making process. It's paramagnetic. So it's a form of magnetism where like some things are weakly attracted to it, but it's not magnetic in the same sense of like magnetite. Now, magnesium, the person who coined this element didn't really want to call it magnesium. He wanted to separate it from the idea of magnesia because it was, there was already confusion about these terms and like what means what and what is called what. And so he tried to call it magnium instead to keep it as far as possible away from the confusion around magnesia, but no such luck. It just ended up being magnesium anyway.
So those are all named for a characteristic of sorts. And we should also mention that there are quite a lot of elements that are named for colors or named after.
Oh, absolutely.
Colors. Got a little list here, actually. Cesium, named after sky blue.
Chlorine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a greenish yellow color that it's named after. Iodine is from the Greek for violet, I think. And indium is not named, I don't think, directly after India, but it's named after indigo, which in turn gets its name from India.
That's right. And then arsenic, too, is ultimately from a word for like gold-colored, too, as well.
Ah, okay.
It's from a Persian word for gold, as a matter of fact. There's a form of arsenic sulfide, like a mineral that has a distinctive gold color.
Ooh, right.
Do not okay. eat.
Oh, and rhodium is from a Greek word meaning rose-colored.
Rubidium is named, means deep red due to the red lines on its spectrum.
Like ruby.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I realized we missed one of the elements that has a name that doesn't match its chemical symbol.
We'll go on.
Tin.
Oh, yeah.
The symbol is SN, and it's from the Latin stannum, which was just the word for tin, basically.
We haven't really covered ones that are named after actual people, particularly. There are just a few that's worth mentioning.
Absolutely.
We haven't mentioned Einsteinium. And
there's a whole collection of them that are just named after our scientists. We talked about the ones named after Marie Curie, but then we have a variety of others.
Copernicium, named after Copernicus. Copernicus?
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Kupfernickel, you know.
Yeah, indeed. And then, yeah, the loads named after scientists. Borium is named after a Dane called Niels Bohr.
He was responsible for like mapping atomic structure and he's a big name in quantum theory. And I, on that note, I also wanted to mention the origin of the word atom, which I think is really interesting. It means uncut or indivisible, and therefore it's related to the word anatomy, which also means like a cutting up or a dissection, literally, which is kind of creepy, but fun.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yes, because that has atom in the middle of it, so it's just a sort of negative in front of the word atom.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. We're pulling it apart ourselves. We are splitting the atom. Mendelevium is named after a Russian called Dmitry Mendeleev, another scientist.
There's also an element named after Russia, as I recall.
There's muscovium.
There's also ruthenium, the Latin name for Russia.
Mm. Yeah, so there are loads of names after places and people. We could list them all now, but it might not be that interesting for dear listener.
A lot of our people, a lot of the people who listen to this are very knowledgeable in different areas, and I have a feeling we'll learn a little more about some of the context that we haven't addressed here.
Yeah, I'm sure there are also some quirky names for some of these elements in other languages as well. We'd love to hear about those too.
One like slightly silly one that we haven't touched on, I guess it's not quite very silly, but I think it's a little silly, is antimony. That's another one where the chemical symbol doesn't match. It's SB is the symbol on that one. And antimonos means not alone because it's in a lot of compounds. So it's a very friendly element. And its symbol, like the name SB, comes from stibium, which is just the Latin name for it.
I like that. That mm-hmm. It's the pro-social element.
Oh, yes. Unlike the noble gases.
The snooty noble gases. How common.
Another one that refers to its behavior is fluorine.
Because it flows, right?
Right, exactly. It flows. One. And it's because it was used as a flux, also meaning flow, in smelting. It was a substance used to remove impurities and make metals more fluid. So, Rob, we've hopscotched around the periodic table here a little bit. I think we're missing a couple of bigger ones. Like, what are we missing? One of them is very fundamental, I think.
You mean carbon? Yeah,
we haven't
talked about carbon yet. I mean, it's not the most exciting of origin stories. It's from the Latin for coal.
Or charcoal, that's right. And you know, carbon is cool because it exists naturally as like diamond, graphite, or charcoal.
And in a lot of European languages, the word for coal is along the words of carbon. Like French, it's charbon.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then before we go, I wanted to address I would say this is probably my favorite origin because of all of its connections. And it has kind of a pretty connection to it. It's beryllium, which comes from, it's named after beryl because it was extracted from beryl, which is a category of gemstones. Oh,
poor beryl. What?
I mean, a lot of these were extracted from various pieces of earth, but the connection...
I mean, it was about me genuinely thought it would have been extracted from a woman called beryl. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but we are full of elements, right?
I mean, I just don't know very many people named beryl, so it didn't occur to me as a name. I bet all of the beryls of the world are brilliant in their own way. And the word brilliant is related to the word beryl. It literally means shining like beryl, which I think is
lovely. Oh, that
is
nice as well. I knew that it was related also to the German word for glasses, which are Brille.
A number of gemstones are beryls, like emerald is a beryl, aquamarine is a beryl, goshenite, morganite, and there's like red beryl, which was called bixbite as well, after Maynard Bixby.
Okay, we've ticked off two important ones there. I think we've got a lot of it covered now.
We have. There is much more of the periodic table, and I'm sure that the people in our comments will tell us what we missed and some of the interesting stories behind them. But I think because of how long we have been talking, we must come to the end of this periodic discussion, correct?
Periodic, yeah. And we've been talking about the periodic table, but we haven't actually addressed why it's called the periodic table.
Mm-hmm. And it is basically because it is arranged in what you might call periods.
Well, they are called periods, aren't they? They do.
Right, exactly. Yeah. the properties of the elements on it recur at intervals in the same area as you read down the rows. So it is arranged in periods. And every sense of the word period is from the Greek periodos, meaning circuit or cycle. So these are, and it can describe spans of things as well.
The word period, meaning what I would call a full stop, also comes from the idea of a complete cycle.
Exactly. You come to the end of your lexical period of speech or writing.
And lo, did we come to the end of a period, by which I mean we are at the end of the second series of Words Unraveled. We're doing this in tranches of 10. I don't know if anyone's noticed this. Perhaps not, but that's what we're doing. We're doing 10 episodes, then we're going to have a little break so we can catch up on some projects, and we'll be back in about a month's time.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to invite anyone who is going to be in the Cincinnati area October 19th to 21st to come see me at the Writer's Digest Annual Conference, especially if you have ever wanted to write a book. I'll be giving two sessions there, one on social media strategies and one on nonfiction book proposals. So come and say hello.
Do it. Be there. And until next time, take care.